Bokeh tov and a wonderful Shabbat Shalom to all. Now, what I'd like to do, if you don't mind, is review the last part. Let me just restart this recording. Review the last part that we did yesterday because things were getting a bit complicated. And so we'll start from today's daf in Masechet Chulin, brought to you from Eretz HaKodesh, is Daf Nun. So, I'd like to start on the bottom of Memtet again and remind you that we've got two different dinim that have to do with the various fats. First of all, how do we define the physical construct of the treifa, chelev, and the kosher shuma? So this started with our discussion of the fats that are around the stomach, the fourth stomach. And it turns out that there's a machlokas between Rabbi Akiva and Rabbi Yishmael as to what is the physical structure of these determinant factors. So the truth is that there are three elements, and they are tutav, krum, viniklav. Tutav means that it actually is capable of just folding over, like drapes over something, and therefore it's not really attached, it's just lightly put over. So the fats, there are fats over the keva, they just take them off, put them on, it's like a blanket. That's too tough. Krum is that the fat has a membrane over it. Niklaf means that that membrane is easily peeled off. But that, all of those three elements are things that characterize the type of fat that is usser, and also, we said, it's the type of fat that will not actually work at sealing a hole. And that makes sense, because the fat that is the kosher fat is actually stuck to whatever organ or whatever piece of muscle that it's attached to. And therefore, if there's a hole there, it makes sense that it can seal it. So we talked about other structures of fat, like the pericardium and things like that, that are shaped more like a helmet, the attachments of the rectum and things like that. So those things, even though they may be attached tightly, but because of their shape more like a helmet, as the Gemara puts it, they will not be so tight. But what we didn't yet get to, assuming that we're starting from here, is how do we define the actual presence of those? We understand the theory. What are those fats when we're looking at an animal? What parts are considered to be the machlokas area between Rabbi Akiva and Rabbi Yishmael? That according to Rabbi Akiva, it would be a fat that is kosher, and according to Rabbi Yishmael, it would be not kosher. So we remember this is the difference between Rabbi Yishmael himself versus Rabbi Yishmael is quoting his family's tradition, which he doesn't hold of. And that is that it was actually mutter and that he was the one that was mekel. So what we said was, let's start with Rav Huna bar Chilinan, Rav Huna bar Rav Nachman, Omar. We've got these two different fats. One is called chimtza. One is called bar. We might as well start with right before that. Omar Rava. I heard from Rav Nachman two different dinim. One about chimtza and one about bar chimtza. These are two different types of fat. One of them is so tame and one of them is not so tame, and I can't remember what he told me. Both of these are on the stomach, and I don't remember which one is which. So Rav Huna bar Chilinan and Rav Huna bar Rav Nachman said, well, it's very simple. Bar chimtza is the type of fat that is sotim, and the chimtza is the type of fat that is not sotim. Omer of Tavot, the way to remember this in terms of the words chimtza and bar chimtza, one is the son of chimtza, one is chimtza, is that yofi kocha av, abein mikocha av, the son has more power than the father. This is a reference to the din of Er. An heir can collect without having to take a shvua if he finds in his father's papers that there's a he's got a debt. against somebody and he's got a contract, he doesn't have to swear that that contract wasn't paid up already because he doesn't know anything about it. So we were not metakin shvuas hesed, but if the father himself had wanted to collect and the person claimed that it was paid, he would have had to take a shvuas hesed. Anyway, that's just the simit. So now, which one, now that we know that there's a chimson of our chimson, I want to zero in, says the Gemara, on which part of the fat on the keva is called the chimsa, and which part is called the bar chimsa. Now here, we have a very easy way of identifying what's what, because it happens to be that there is a major differentiation between the traditions in Bavel and the traditions in Eretz Yisrael about what fats are eaten on the stomach. And because of that, we can identify, because we all know what the differences are in the minhag, so we can identify very clearly what's what. So Tashma, the Omer of Nachman, we had this whole interesting situation in which in Bavel they were very machmir, and they said, well, it's not kosher. And not only that, because it's not kosher, it's of the type of structure that is not going to seal up a puncture wound. If it falls over, it says there's a hole in the stomach, and it's covered over by the type of fat that is not going to be kosher, then it's also not going to seal. That's what they said in Bavel. And Reb Nachman thought that this super-duper chumras were getting out of hand. So Reb Nachman said, this is crazy. The Omer Reb Nachman, look, in Eretz Yisrael, the most religious people eat this kind of fat, okay? And for them, it's good enough to eat. And you're telling me that here in Bavel, that people won't even use it to seal a hole because maybe it's not, I mean, come off it. It's too much. It's too much. Now, what's really the difference between them? Well, there's a couple of issues that are the difference. Number one, eating is an iser karis. And the question of whether it seals trefa is iser lav. And we're always more machmir on karis. But furthermore, Reb Nachman is assuming that, look, you know, we don't even know that trefa fat is not sosin, because Reb Sheshi says that it is sosin. So, I mean, like, how much are you going to be machmer on this? You've got plenty of shitas to be semich on, and you're not talking about an iser karis. Don't eat it if you don't want to eat it, but don't say that it won't seal. So, lididan mistam nami lo satim, for us, it's not going to seal. Now, once we've identified the issue, now we know where the minhagim in Eretz Yisrael and Bavel were different. So here's what we know about that situation. Now this, remember, is the shape of a stomach, even a human stomach, but the shape of a cow's stomach is exceedingly curved. So it's literally curved. It's not just curved on one end. It's a little bit like a human stomach. It is an actual curved organ as it sits in the body. The front part of the curve, we compare to a bow. And the back part of the curve, we compare to the string that runs along the back of the bow, which is called a yeter in Hebrew. So the thing is that the akashta is the keshet. So the bow part, everybody agrees, both in Bavel and in Eretz Yisrael, that fat that's on that area is not considered to be kosher fat, and therefore, this is basically the din is that the akash, what we're saying right now is that the akashta is tutav, krum, and niklaf, and therefore it satisfies all three criteria of the non-kosher fat, even according to Rabbi Akiva, and because of that, it's really chalev, and it's iser d'oraisa to eat it. The argument between the minhag of Bavel and the minhag of Eretz Yisrael is the aitra. The aitra is the Aramaic for the yeter. So that's the string along the back of the bow. So there we have a machlokas, because it doesn't have all of the characteristics, and it does have krum, the niklav, but it's not too tough. So basically, this is the machlokas between Rabbi Akiva and Rabbi Yishmael. So Eretz Yisrael goes according to Rabbi Akiva, and Rabbi Akiva, remember, required all three things, tutav, krum, the niklav, before it's going to be considered a non-kosher fat. And since the part that is on the string, on the yeter, is actually connected. So you can't call it the tutav. It doesn't just lie over it like a blanket. It really is connected. So it could only be non-kosher according to Rabbi Yishmael. In Eretz Yisrael, they went according to Rabbi Akiva. And because of that, it was not a problem, and they would eat it. So that would be the machlokas. That's the first lashon. The second lashon is ikri amri. Then, on the contrary, everybody agrees that the aitra is definitely kosher. So that means the part along the string, not along the bow. Everybody agrees with Rabbi Akiva, and that anything that's not too tough is not considered to be a non-kosher fat, and therefore it would also be sotim, and you can even eat it. And that was not the part they were arguing on. They were arguing, in this version, they were arguing on the actual akashta, on the part that is shaped like a bow. So basically, in Bavel, they held that it's essentially considered to be similar to a blanket. So it's tutavi, and therefore that's enough. And the thing is, it's not entirely tutav, because there's a place at the edge where there's a connection, but that connection is just a line that connects it, and that's sort of towards the middle, and either side just sort of flaps over the stomach. So that's a question whether that's considered to be tutav or not. But everybody agrees with Rabbi Akiva that if it were tutav, then of course it wouldn't be kosher. So in Bavel they held even a thin connecting tiny line that holds the tutav in place, and it's not really, the whole fat is not connected, afal pikin, that is considered to be tutav, because it's just a little line, and in Eretz Yisrael, they held it, so a little line is enough to make it non-tutav, and it's connected, and therefore it would be mutter. That's what they were arguing on. So at least now we know exactly what the minhagim were, and the truth is, in Eretz Yisrael, they actually would eat that chalev, and like Rav Avia said, that according to Rav Ami, Mikamtzin means you take a little bit off, like a komet, sort of. You take a little bit off because you need to take a little bit off, not because it isn't kosher, but because the chelev of the dakim is right above it, and there might always be a little bit of chelev adakim that's attached to the top of the fat that's around the keva. So take off the little bit on top, just in case some of it was cut off of it, and the rest of it you can eat. We take off a little bit, mekamtzim, and we eat the rest. So Rav Avia says, I was once there with Rav Ami, and I saw that he actually ate it. And it's not just theory. Come to Vahavaleh, they took off a little bit off of the top, gave it to him, and he ate it. Now, once happened that Rabbi Hanina had a guy working in his house as a waiter, and this fellow was from Bavel. So Rabbi Hanina was there with this guy, and the shamei, his butler, was there, and he says to the butler, "Kumotzli, give me a little bit, give me what's cut off a little bit, give it to me, and I'll eat it." And the butler wouldn't move. He was like very hesitant to do that. He sees that he's very disturbed. So then he remembered, oh my gosh, Omale Bavlat, or you come from Bavel, you think I'm about to eat karfas, and you don't feel right in handing it to me. So you're right. Okay, never mind. Bavlat, goom, take the whole thing off, and shdi, throw it in the garbage. I'm not going to eat something usher. In your mind, I'm not going to eat something that's usher in front of you. Anyway, Tanya, moving on now to the new sukkah, yeah? Rabbi Shimon ben Gamliel Omer. In the event,
Rabbi, is that a din or is that midas chasidus?
No, that many say it's a din that you can't eat in front of somebody, even though he's in your makom, since he's mechuyev to keep the chumras of the makom that he went from. So you don't eat in front of someone who holds its usher. You don't eat it. There's a number of approaches. Actually, if you bring it up, there's a number of approaches in the Achronim about its mamish usher, or whether this guy, it was usher for him to give it. In other words, was it also for me to eat it in front of him? Or is the problem is that since, according to his shita, it's also, so even though he's working for me and he's b'chuyev to do what I'm telling him, and but he doesn't have a right to feed me yisr according to him. So that's the question, whether we focus on the waiter as the problem or on being neig heter from Rabbi Hanina as the problem. Thank you for reminding me to bring it up. Okay. Tanya, now let's move on. Let's talk about a hole in the intestines, but this hole, now again, evolution has done a much better job than the tire manufacturers, because when a tire gets a hole in it, it's very, very difficult to get a self-sealing tire. But when the intestines get a hole in them, they actually have a self-sealing liquid that plugs up the hole and it actually keeps it plugged. Now, again, you know, if the tire manufacturers would just pay more attention to what nature has solved, we'd have better tires. But you know how it is. These humans always think they know best. So anyway, if you've got a hole in the intestines, and b'nei me'ayim shenikvu, v'leichas otamtam, and then that liquid in the intestines seals it, that would be kosher. Well, when you say liquid, I mean, what kind of liquid do you mean? You mean just that mucus? No, no, no. Omer Rav Kahana, this is a special self-sealing liquid. It's called the Shirka de Me'aya. It's very sticky, and it is difficult to get any of it out of the intestines. It's only nafik agav duchka. You have to put a lot of pressure on a knife to take it off, and it is very, very strong in terms of plugging holes. So it flows directly into the hole immediately, and that's enough. You don't have to worry about anything escaping, and therefore it's not called, as we saw before, it's not called a hole. It's not that it's a hole that we fixed. It's a hole that is up front, is not considered to be a hole. At least remember that was the Rashba's approach to all of these sugyas, and that's the way we've been learning it. So now, the Chavraya of Rabbi Abba, we're going to identify with these are. However, the Chavrusa of Rev Abba, he was Mekabo from Rev Abba, a Mesera that Rev Abba had. Who is that Chavrusa? Umanu. That's Rabbi Zera. Some say it was actually the other way around. And it was the Chavrusa of Rabbi Zera who learned from Rabbi Zera. And who is the Chavrusa of Rabbi Zera? Rev Abba. But we're not sure who learned from whom. But in any event, the point was as follows, that Omar Reb Abba, Berei the Rebbe Chia Bar Abba, Hachi Omar Rebbe Chia Bar Abba, Omar Rabbi Yochanan, that we paskin like Rebbe Shimon ben Gamliel in the din of Treifas, which would mean this din, as we're about to identify, and we paskin like Rebbe Shimon when it comes to the famous question of Avelut. Now, what were these two halachas? So halacha, that's a reference to this psak. The shirka de maya de nafik agav duchka is considered to be, if it's the sotmatan, then it's not considered to be a hole. That halacha. What was he referring to in the halacha of Rabbi Shimon with Avelut? So this was actually, even though it says it's not, it isn't really a Mishnah, but this is a braita that says, so let's say one of the members of the family, one of the brothers, arrives within 3 days of the family starting to sit Shiva. Let's say the father died, and they're sitting Shiva, and this brother arrives late, and he gets there within the first 3 days. So then, if he was in a location that theoretically could have been told on the day of the death, so he was within a day's journey, and that's called a Makom Karov, and he didn't hear Lamaisa, but he arrives within 3 days, then he starts counting with them, even though he didn't even know about it. So in other words, the third day of Shiva for the family is his third day of Shiva as well. He doesn't start on his own. But if he was more than a day away, he was a Makom Rachok, then he has to start counting from his own count wherever it is that he arrives. After the first 3 days, mikan ve'ela, even if he'd been within a day at the day of the death and he could have heard about it, he's still monela atzmo. He's like in a different world. Rabbi Shimon says, no, Even if he gets there on the last day of Shiva, if he was within a day's journey, l'chatchila, and could have known about it, so he keeps only that day of Shiva. He counts together with the family. So Rabbi Yochanan was saying that in this we pasken like Rabbi Shimon, and somebody said, I don't remember who it was, but Omar Mandahu, somebody said when this was discussed in the Beis HaMedrash, I wish I could be zeicher to go to Eretz Yisrael, and I would go and hear this directly from Rav Abba, the Rav Chiya Bar Abba, because it's like such a nogea. Both of these, so nogea, I want to hear what the din is about these two issues. Anyway, he was zeicher, and he ended up, this anonymous person, ended up going up to Eretz Yisrael, and Kisolik, in classic fashion, of course, he comes and he meets Rav Abba Breda Pia Bar Abba, and he says, oh, I'm so excited to meet you. I've been waiting to hear whether what they say you said is the what you really hold. So he says to him, did you say Omar Mar Halacha K'Reb Shimon Ben Gamliel Betreifa, and that you can rely on the Shir Kedemaya to be so say a Nekev? And he says, he looks at him and he says, what? I said, ain't halacha. What? This is ridiculous. This game of telephone. I said the halacha is not like Rabbi Shimon ben Gamliel. Oh, okay. What about Rabbi Shimon, the din in Avelis, if somebody comes to me, Mokum Korot? Can he count with them even on the eighth day? Omar Lay, oh. That, I never said that halacha is like Rabbi Shimon. I said it much more complex. I said, that's actually a machlokas, because Rav Chisda, he said the halacha is like Rabbi Shimon. Rabbi Yochanan agreed, the halacha is like Rabbi Shimon. Rav Nachman, who's a very serious Pesach Hador, he said that the halacha is not like Rabbi Shimon. And Lamaisa, ain't halacha like Rabbi Shimon. K'Reb Shimon ben Gamliel betreifa, but l'maisa halacha is K'Reb Shimon when it comes to the din of avela. So that's because of a very important klal, which is ready to be immediately and automatically written down magically in Gavi's list, and that is halacha k'divrei hamekel be'evel. Anytime there's a machlokas when it comes to the din of avelas, the halacha is always l'kula. The dinim, which are the rabbanan dinim, are never given in order to be machmer on. They're all sveikas to rabbanan that were not machmer in inyanim of avelos. Next thing, now we talked before about blisters, and if you found blisters, we spoke about blisters that were on the lungs. If you find blisters, and you have a blister that had a hole through it. Now, we talked about there that you cannot be makifin babu, because we said blisters are very changeable and you cannot be makif. What does makif mean? So remember, we discover a hole and we have no idea whether it was a hole that was occurred before the sheet or after the sheet. So the din of makifin, which literally means bring one up against the other, means in other words to compare it. So the din of makifin allows you to make a new hole now and then compare them. If they look the same, then it's not possible that the other hole was made while the animal was alive, because there would be a completely different coloration, bleeding, and it would look totally different if it was a hole that was made in a piece of meat or a hole that was made in a living organism. And therefore, you can rely on that to determine whether the hole was there before the Shechita or it just occurred now while we were handling this basically in the butchery. So we said, when it came to a lung, we were able to be makif, but when it came to bu'od, we were not able to be makif. Now the question is, how about the intestines, which is the area now that we're looking at? So Amar Rav Shimi Bar Chiya, you can be makif and b'nei me'ayim, and anything that's in the intestinal area, if there's a hole, check it to compare it with a new hole that you make now and see whether it looks the same. So there was a maisa of b'nei me'ayim that had a hole in them, and they brought it to Rava to check. So Rava puts the two, makes a new hole, puts the two next to each other, looks at them, and they look very different. So he wanted to basically parcel it and say it's Trefa, because apparently the earlier hole was from before Shechita. So Rav Misharshia, Rava's son that he was so proud of, remember, so Rav Misharshia comes along, and he says, let me look at that, Dad. And he grabs the Bnei Me'ayim, and he rubs it with his fingers, the new hole. And then they look the same. So he says, here, they look exactly the same. So Rava said to him, well, how do you know you can do that? How do you know you could do that magic? Well, Malay, it's very logical, isn't it? I mean, Kama Yadi B'mashmishu B'hani Mekami D'Lesi L'Kami D'Mar. Look, how many people do you think looked at these holes before they brought them to you? You know, here the butcher takes, oh, what do you think about this? Everybody's looking at it and says, oh, I don't know, we should. Probably 20 people looked at it. So, I mean, how do you expect it to look the same if it's a freshly made hole? So I just did what everybody else did to the first hole. I did to the second hole. Now you're comparing two holes that went through the same. Look, you know, it's like comparing twins. There's the environmental factors, and then there's those genetic factors. Well, the same thing is true of the hole. You got to make sure that they went through the same hell. So
I was thinking like all the lulavim that everybody's mashing.
Yes,
you get to it.
The Estrogan, our disaster, yeah. It's called Mishmashiyad, exactly. So, exactly this lesson, the Mashmashuban. So, again, Rava proudly said, ah, we had this earlier. My boy, Chacham Bri Betrefis Krebi Tarfan. My son is a Chacham, the way Rabbi Yochanan. He's such a bucky in the name of Trefis. Now, what about the lung? So, Rabbi Yochanan, Rabbi Lozer, Damar Tarvayu, Mikifin Berei. You can compare by making a new hole in the lung and seeing whether it looks like the hole that you discovered here. If it does, so then that means it was after Shechita, the butchery. And if not, then it was there before, then it's a trefa. Omar Rava, well, now, wait a minute. It's true that you can, but it has to be in the same side of the lobes, because you can have different ways in which a hole will show, whether it's the right side or the left side, and therefore you could compare two holes in the left lung or two holes in the right lung, but you can't compare from one lung to another. Mi'arugal arugal lo. And halacha is actually not like that. Hilchata afilu mi'arugal arugal. However, you cannot compare a large lobe. Remember that we have the two large lobes, one on the right, one on the left, and then we have a smaller lobe, and then we have a new Siddhavarta. So from a large to a small, or a small to a large, that doesn't work. So you can even compare from one row of lobes, but not midaka, if it's only if it's midaka ladaka, or migasa lagasa, but not from a large lobe to a small lobe, even if it's on the same aruga, and not midaka lagasa. Abaye v'Rava de'amri tavayu, you can compare also a sliced or whole that we said, of course, the whole has to be the size of an iser, and the slice would have to be rove, but whatever the situation was in the kunin, and you're not sure whether this was something that happened in the butcher shop, you can also be mekifin in the kunin. So Amr of Papa, when do we say that? That's only elabota chulia. Avu mechulia lechulia, lo. You cannot compare. Remember Rashi said before, I mean, it's quite clear. If it has to be the size of an iser, one chulia is never the size of an iser. So how can it be referring to a literal one of those rings in the dryer pipe? It can't be referring to that. So remember that Rashi said before, we find this lashon of chulia as three strings, three wrappings of the string. And when you're making tzitzit, this is the chulia over here must refer to the same thing. So it would be the size of three rings is one chulia, one group of chulia. So if it's within a three rings, you can compare, but you cannot compare one chulia to another chulia, but that's not true. La halacha, the hilchasa is not like Rav Papa. And even mi chulia l'chulia, or you could compare a Baruch Hu Yeh LeBaruch Hu Yeh. Now that would be referring to in the back of the neck where the chuliot, remember, are only connected by tissue, not by cartilage. So the chuliah is thicker in front. It's got cartilage facing the front of the neck. But as it goes back to the back of the neck, the cartilage becomes connective tissue that holds the cartilage together as a ring, but it's not really a ring of cartilage. So if the hole was in the area that we're calling here the Baruch Hu Yeh, the part that's in the back of the neck, you could compare it there also. But you cannot compare, obviously, a hole that was in the front part that went through cartilage to a hole that went through tissue. It's not comparable. So lo mi Hu Yeh LeBaruch Hu Yeh, velo mi Baruch Hu Yeh LeHu Yeh. Omar Zairi. Now we've got another issue here. And this would be a case where the part of the intestines that's called the rectum, now the rectum people don't really realize is actually part of the intestine. And therefore, it also would have a din of nikva. The thing is, though, that the rectum comes right between the hips of the hip bone of the animals, and it's actually held in place right against the hip bone. And therefore, if that part of the intestines was punctured, it would be kosher. Chalcholet shenikva kishera ho'il v'yirechayim ma'amidotuta, because the hips surround it, and therefore there's no hole because it's basically completely closed off. So, akama, when we're talking about, we're saying that what does that mean? What? How much do we call over here enough to be the chalcholet that is supported? Any amount at all? So how much is that were included that is not going to be a nikav badakin? So Omar Rabbi Loi, Omar Rabbi Yochanan, well, the place where it's actually right up against the hips, over there, it would only be a trefa if it was rov that was gone. But if it wasn't rov, forget it. If it's not literally up against the hips, so it's shaloba malkam yitavek, at that point, it's like anything else in the intestines. And even a tiny hole makes it a trefa. Rabbanan, Amrua Rabbanan kameda rova mishmeda rav Nachman. So they said this over. This was Rabbi Yochanan's psak. They said this over to Rava, and they claimed that it was Rav Nachman's psak, and Rava was very upset about that, because everybody was always quoting Rav Yashav for everything. In those days, it was Rav Nachman. And he said to them, how many times have I told you to stop hanging empty bottles on Rav Nachman's tree? It's not Rav Nachman. Stop hanging empty bottles on Rav Nachman. Actually, Rav Nachman said, not like that. He said, Mokom hadavek afilo nital kulo kash. It's not true that rove would be enough to create a trefa, even if nothing was left of the rectum. And basically, the animal is voiding into the area between the bones of the hips. It also would not be considered to be a trefus, as long as there is nishtayer bo kedei tvisa. There is some part of the tissue that's left that you'd be able to hold on to. So how much is that? So we saw before that was very unclear whether the shear was, we discussed that earlier, Amar Abaye Kimlo badata betura. But the question is, what a badata is betura? Whether that was a finger breadth, or whether it was just like to hold on with your nails, whether it was three fingers. Okay, we had that machlokas earlier. And again, it wasn't clear there, and it's not clear here. There were a lot of different shitas, and the same different shitas here, how to define a badata exactly. Now, the really opaque part of our Mishnah, which we've seen a lot of discussion on even up till this point, was the Mishnah talked about the difference between the keres hapnimi and the keres hachitza. And we weren't sure what exactly that means. So the keres hapnimi, remember, was very sensitive to trefas, and it would be a trefa even if there was a nekuva. But the keres hachitzon needed to be actually psuka, beruba. So now, how do we define that area? I mean, it's one organ, the keres. What do we call the inside and what do we call the outside? Amar Rav Yehuda Amar Rab, Heid Natan Bar Shila Reish Davechaya de Tzipori, the chief butcher in Tzipori, was Natan Bar Shila. He was made in front of Rebbe. And the butchers are the ones that are the most bekiyim, obviously, in these dinim. Butcher being the sheikhet here. And he said that he heard from Rebbe Nosson, a zohi keres hapnimi, the sanya dibi. So what is the keres hapnimi? It's the part that even the wolves won't eat. That is so disgusting. Usually a wolf will, they will just rip open the intestines, they'll eat everything, but not the sanya dibi. So they call this the part that even the wolves are disgusted by and refuse to eat it. So this is actually not part of the keres, which is really weird because it's in a completely different place. The keres actually empties into the small intestines, and the sanya dibi actually is between the, it's like a separate keres. So maybe that's why they call it a keres, because it is the same kind of thing that empties into the large intestines. So it's really a little bit strange that we call it the keres. I mean, sorry, into the small intestines. It's a little bit strange that we call it the keres, but maybe that's why. In other words, you have two kereses. You have the keres, which is the big keres, on top, and you have the keres hapnimi, which is it looks like a keres a little bit, obviously much smaller. So it is to the small intestines what the keres itself is to the large intestines what the keres itself is to the small intestines. Maybe that's the point. Could be. That's what the book suggests over here. The old book. I don't know if you remember the old Sichas Chulin book. So it's one of the earlier books. So that's what he suggests. That the Chitzena is the actual keres, the real keres, and that needs to have a beruba, and we call this, which is called apparently the sikum, we call this a keres because it's going into the large intestines the same way that the keres is going into the small intestines. Okay, that would be a fascinating shot because we'd be talking about two completely different organs, and we're calling one the keres hapnimi and one the keres hachitze. So obviously this needed edus. So he was made that this is Rabbi Nosson's Kabbalah about what the meaning of the Mishnah is. Rabasi Omer Reb Yochanan, that's not the keres hapnimi. The Mokum Tsar Yesh Bekeres, there's a thinner place, Reb Yochanan said. That thin place is called the keres hapnimi. So Mokum Tsar Yesh Bekeres, but I don't know where it is. Om Reb Nachum Bar Yitzchak, well, that's great. So now the keres just fell into a hole. We can forget about it because now we know nothing about it. You don't know where it is, but you know what it is. So now if you know what it is and not where it is, so now we might as well throw out the whole keres. I mean, come on, man. No fal keres bibiras. Now you threw it into a hole? Get out of here. Om Reb Acha Baravava Om Reb Asi. No, it's not that we don't know where it is. He doesn't know where it is. I'll tell you where it is. That Mokum Tsar that Rabbi Yochanan was referring to is where it is going towards. It starts to narrow as it becomes part of the Veshet. So again, here we're talking about Lamata because the animal's hanging upside down. And as we said, we always talk about that as our standard way of referring to things. So it means from the point where it narrows towards the veshet downwards, meaning when the animal is standing, it's as the keres, it gets closer to the esophagus, right? Okay, so now we've got two very, very different approaches. Now there's other shitas in what is considered to be the Keres HaPnimi. Rav Yaakov Bar Nachmeni Omer Shmuel, it's a mokom she'in bo milat. There's a place we talked about before, the cilia. This is not cilia, this is milat. Milat means wool. So this is a much thicker lining. And the area that doesn't have that thicker lining, that is called the Keres HaPnimi. A third pshat. Fourth pshat. Rav Avina said, actually, the Gvina quoted Rav is telling me, and this we had earlier, that it's the tefach in the veshet that is closest to the keres, which is the Keres HaPnimi. And remember, the Gemara changed that because otherwise we ended up with a question. So we had an Ibais Ema, either the Ibais Ema, we're talking about a Shor Godol, and a Shor Godol has the cilia further up. You remember that whole discussion. So there could be, if according to one part of the Ibais Ema, it's the other way around, that it's the Tefach in the Keres, which is Samach Leveshet, that's the Keres HaPnimis. But anyway, one of those two Pshat. So that's what Gneva said in the name of Rav. Now, another approach to what's the Keres HaPnimis is that in Eretz Yisrael, they quote Rabbi Yossi Bar Chanina as saying that actually the entire Keres is the Keres HaPnimi. The Keres HaChitzon is not part of the Keres. The Keres HaChitzon is basically, it's the actual meat that goes around the abdominal wall. And we call it the keres because it covers over the keres area. It has nothing to do with the keres, and that we refer to the keres achitzon, because if you're looking at a fat slob of a shor or a human, what you're looking at, you can call the keres, that's his outer stomach, so to speak. That's the part sticking out that goes over his belt, you know. That's the keres achitzon. So we use that language about an animal as well. Then we have yet another approach, and that is Rabba Bar Avuna. And he says that the Keres HaPnimis is the Mafra'ata. Well, that's great. I never heard of part of an animal called a Mafra'ata. What's the Mafra'ata? Omer of Avia, it means the place that you do the Pera. Pera is the Pare Tafke, where you rip things open. So the place that the butcher slits when he cuts open the stomach of the animal, that is the area that is the called the Keres HaPnimi. And the rest of it is the Keres HaChitza. And in the Hardah, they would actually do like Rabba Bar Avuna, and they held that the only part that is considered to be the Keres HaPnimi, which you have to be machmer on, that even the slightest nekuva is enough to make it a trefa, is the part where the butcher will always slice open in the belly. Omer Rav Ashi Lan Meimar, I mean, there's so many different shitas. How come you guys rely just on this one shita that you go according to Rabba Bar Avuna? I mean, what about all these other shitas? Omar Le Rav Ashi La Neymar, all of these other shitas are included in what he said, because the Mafra'ata includes all of those places. Now, some say that it even includes the Sanya Dibi. Why? Because the Sanya Dibi is usually packed solid. And as the butcher will slice open the belly, even though the Sanya Dibi is on the other side of the keres, you wouldn't see it, it falls down and out. And because of that, it would even include that. So that means when he said everything is included, he meant everything. Kulu shayacham b'derabba bar avuna. Well, I mean, what about Rav Asi, Amar Rav Yochanan, that it's that Mokum the Meitzar, but he doesn't know where it is. And Omar Lay, what do you mean? He didn't know where it was, but remember Rav Acha Bar Ava, he said he did know where it is. He explained where it is, and that's also included in the Mafrata. Well, what about Rav Avina and the Bnei Ma'arova? It certainly doesn't include a tefach of the Veshet Samach Lekeres. That for sure you don't get to. And what if you go according to the Bnei Ma'arava, who say that the entire keres is considered to be, that's much more machmir, that the entire keres is the keres HaPnimi and only the busser on the, I mean, you didn't include that. No. Okay. Look, I'm not saying that everybody agrees with, includes every possible Shita. I'm just saying, look, we've got most of the Shitas except for two minhagim. No, that indeed is a machlokas. We paskin not like that. Don't ask us, well, how do you paskin against everybody? We don't paskin against everybody. We're paskining like everyone except for these two Shitas. Okay, then the Mishnah continues on. Rav Yehuda Aimer, well, it depends. If it's a big animal, not a type of animal, but a big animal, so then the issue would be one tefach, not rove. If it's a small animal, then it would be the rove. So the when you said that the keres achitze is berove, that's not necessarily true. It's actually whatever comes first. That's what defines, as we're about to see, that's what defines big and small. So Amar Rabbi Minyomi Bar Yefet, Amar Rabbi Elazar. When we say big, we don't mean that it's really a very large animal. When we say small, we don't mean a very small animal. There's no standard big and small. Basically, it simply means whatever comes first. So in the event, it's lo gedola gedola mamash, lo ktana ktana mamash, ela kol shenikra ba tefach, if the tefach comes first and it's not a roof, then that is a large animal. That's what we're defining as a large animal. That you can have a whole tefach torn and it won't be roof. So then that would be enough to patzel it. And then ruba, if it gets roof of its torn and it's not a tefach, that's obviously a ketana. So it's just simply putting it that way to tell you whatever comes first. Is it the rove that comes first? So then the rove will possibly. Is it a tefach and it's a large animal and the tefach comes first? So then, fine. If obviously, that's what's going to possibly. And that is, therefore, the definition of large and small. Just a nice way to say it. Now, if it would be a rove, so what we mean is, if it's a rove, but it's not a tefach, that's what is meant by a animal that is a small animal. Well, ruba v'lo avi tefach, I mean, isn't it obvious? I mean, normally we say ruba kakula, right? So, I mean, isn't it sort of obvious that if ruba is kakula, and it's torn barov, so basically it's completely open. I mean, why do I need to be taught that Rav Yehuda has to tell me? You should know that if that's how you're defining it, so it's a given. Anything that is rove is basically completely destroyed. So why do I need Rav Yehuda in the Mishnah? No, I'll tell you why. Because what we're talking about over here is where it's precisely you have a tefach in a little tiny hair's breadth, right? So you have a tefach in another mashu. So now the question is whether the tefach is a shear that has to look like a tear. Not that we're defining it literally in terms of rove, but we're saying, like we had before, sometimes you do a ruba the nika, right? So that's the question. Over here, it is a rove when you measure it, but if you let it tear a little bit further, it would be a very striking shear of a tefach. So you might have thought that in such a case, it's not called a trefa until it's a ruben and nicker, which is a tefach in this case. Kamash malam, so Rav Yehuda is saying, no, it's mamish adin in rov, and the shear of a tefach is not there to define any other shear. Omer geniva, omer vaasim. If in the keres hachitzon, which requires the ruba, if you actually cut out a hole, so now you use the circular drill, right? You cut a hole right through the keres. If it was nigdira, so then if it's the size of a sela, then it's trefa. Why? Because if you would stretch out, you take, there's a machlokas had what we mean by stretching out. The simple meaning would be, if you took the circumference, you take a string that's the circumference of this hole, and you would put it straight across, it would be a tefach line. So, Omer Rabbi Chia Bar Abba, Ledidima Farshli Mine Digniva. I was once on the ferry boat by Nardal, And I met up with Gneva, and Gneva explained to me over there that a sela, exactly, actually would be kosher. If it's slightly more than a sela, then it's a treif. When you say slightly more than, is there a way that we can measure that in like ways that we use? Yes, we use as a measurement date bits, the standard date bits. So Rabbi Yosef says the size of a sela is kagon to island tlat kashiyata betzipa beduchka and below tzipa beravcha. Date bits, there's two different types of date bits. There's the date bit with a little bit of fruit remaining on them, and that's that sort of membrane that goes over the date bit that if you really like dates, you suck it until there's nothing left but the really wooden part of the date bit. That is a date bit below tzipa. So if you got three date pits like that, they will pass through the hole of a sela without any problem. But if you're the kind of guy that just pulls off the date, you don't really give it a nice chew. So then they're going to get through the sela hole, but you're going to have to push them. So it's going to be beduchka. I think that we can wait. Yeah, people should wait for the next. So yeah, Barnea is trying to show us something. Date pits. Oh. But the question is that a standard date pit? How many dates have you opened to arrive at the standard date pit? That's the question.
I've opened hundreds of dates, actually, different kinds, but this morning.
Okay.
Well, here it is.
You can share those. They look pretty good.
I can share them, but here's a little bit of food that's on the end.
Thank
and
you.
And it's sticking out.
For today's talk.
Ruby, I think Barnea is helping us remember. He's trying to make a point with the date pits.
Okay, beautiful, Rabosai. So we learned quite a bit today. We went over once again the different minhagim of Eretz Yisrael and Bovel in terms of chimtza and bar chimtza. We spoke about the type of tutav, which might be really tutav, might not be tutav, and that was the difference. So that got us a little bit more deeply into the machlokes between Rabbi Akiva and Rabbi Yishmael about what characterizes a type of fat that is sotein. We spoke about self-sealing tires or self-sealing intestines and whether we could be senech on that. We had a little bit of a tangential discussion about the dinim of Alphelus of Rabbi Shimon, of someone who was babi makom korev, and ended up with a new klal about the halachic givi on ekel be'avelus. We talked about the type of holes that you can actually compare one to the other, and we learned about the misharshia's cute trick of making a hole look like the original hole that so impressed his father Rava. And we talked about the various places in the intestines, which would include the rectum and what is considered to be, if it's up against the bones of the hip bones, whether it's considered to be a nikuva of the meayim. And then we talked about lots and lots of different shitas about the difference between the keres hapnimi and the keres hachitzon. I mean, extreme differences in which I got, you go all the way from one tefach of the keres would be called the keres hapnimi to the entire keres is the keres hapnimi. And the keres hachitzon is the boser that's chay for the keres and all points in between. So basically, as we said, nofal keres bebira. And that means we got a lot of places to be machmer on keres. And I think that was the main stuff that we dealt with quite a bit for one day, let me tell you. So Richie's very excited because he's got the whole Shabbos to do his 30 times over Chazora. Maybe he'll even make 40 times close to Chazor. No cynical comments, Richie. Only happiness.
I was going to say, this has been a very holy year.
Okay. We needed somebody to take Barnea's place, and we're always happy to have a closing word from Richie.
Richie, that was very gutsy of you.
Okay, and now we have our...
I don't have a stomach for it, though.
We have our... I hope...
Get yourselves together, gentlemen.
I hope we'll still have time for E.T. And go ahead, E.T.
I'm afraid Rebby's not going to like it. 8:30. 8:30.
8:30. My goodness gracious. Well, okay, I suppose once again we meet up at 9:30.
Quarter to 10, yeah.
So, Bezrat Hashem, we will meet. Shara Tovo, Mutzlachas. Oh, boy. We're in tough spaces here, let me tell you. But, okay. Well, we knew it would come to this, so it was only a question of time. And they're going to end up...
Any consolation?
End up listening to me in the end, Richie. It just took 5 years, you know? So, Bezrat Hashem, we shall see you at Mitzvah Shabbos. Kol Tov, everyone. And those who come to the parasha, look forward to meeting with you this afternoon.